listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to this episode on LA Talk Radio of Your Ultimate Life, the show designed to help you create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. And always, I do everything I can to bring great guests to help you and to teach you and me. And today I've got a great guest, Haley Enright, coming all the way from Portugal. Haley, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
You are welcome. Haley is a rock star who's lived in Portugal for 9 years, and she just saw Portugal lose to Spain in the World Cup, which sad because I was hoping Portugal would win just because, so Ronaldo could have one more, you know, one more bracket maybe he would get into. But anyway, whatever.
Oh, yeah. It was a quiet night here. I tell you what, there were no screaming in the streets, none of that joyful noise.
I can imagine. Right now, as I came down here, Switzerland and Colombia, I think, are in a penalty kick shootout, and I didn't see the result. So they played 120 minutes and 0-0, so whatever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, all the way, nothing. So we're not here to talk about the World Cup, although that's fun and it's going on. I love your identity creation thinking. And the reason that I don't do big intros because I just don't. But what I do is I want the guests to wax poetic and detailed about what they've learned in their lives, because I know that the story of your own becoming, what you've lived and experienced, is the most powerful thing that any of us have. So Haley, let's just start right in. I asked you beforehand what you wanted to make sure we talked about, and it was about identity. So why don't you tell us what identity is and then launch into what you'd like us to know, and I'll just kind of ask some questions along the way.
Sounds amazing. Let's do it. Yeah. So my name is Haley Enright. I'm a nervous system regulation specialist and an acupuncturist. I've given more than 16,000 treatments. I've been in practice for almost 2 decades. I've opened 4 studios in 3 countries. But these days, a lot of my work is remote energy field work. And,
I'm going to stop you right there because I will. So did you notice a transition? Because I've had acupuncture and needles and I've had, some other stuff. Can't think of the name of it right now. I don't want to waste time trying. But other things where it's been tactile, massage and acupuncture and cupping and Yo Mama production, whatever it is. And now you've moved to remote. And I know a lot of people have done that. Did you notice any difference in how it worked or how people received it when you went to remote work?
Yeah, well, so, it's doing remote acupuncture isn't really a thing, because if you're not in the same room as somebody to put needles in, you're not technically doing acupuncture, but remote energy field work and nervous system regulation is definitely a thing. Some of my clients are on the other side of the world in completely different time zones. And yeah, proximity does not matter in that case.
Well, anyway, go ahead. I interrupted you because that was just occurred to me as you started. So go for it.
Yeah. So the one pattern that I noticed over and over again is that when people want to change their lives, they think that it starts in the mind with their identity, but that's actually where it ends. And so this led me to create what I call the 5 layers. And the 5 layers is a somatic architecture of how our identity gets created, how we become who we are. So the 5 layers begins with something that is quite mysterious.
Well, I can't wait for the mystery. So you can hold me in suspense as long as you want, or you can just spill the beans.
Okay, let's go for it. Yeah, the first layer is your energy field. And the energy field is that mysterious thing where divine consciousness condenses itself to become you. And so this is not tangible, right? But we live inside our energy fields. We're inside this every day, every moment of our lives. It's kind of like the home bubble that we exist in. If you're not sure if you have an energy field, maybe you've noticed sometimes standing in line at the grocery store that somebody's like a little too close to you and you can't see them because they're behind you and they're not touching you, but you know that somebody's there and it's a little bit strange. That's because they're in your energy field. And so you know that, you're aware of it.
You know, what I think about when I think about that is we have a you, you know, there's a you that's the essence, and it's not your body, because if somebody gets in an accident and loses a leg or both legs or something, they're still them. Like, they're not partly them, or even worse, like, let's say more. Like, I don't know how much you can lose before the body just quits working, but, you know, there's a you that is that thing. And when you describe it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what I think of, that essence that is you. And some people call it the spirit or the soul or whatever, but that is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Essentially, that is the thing that is, some people like to call it God or source. That is the thing that has brought itself down into a more tangible experience to become you, because, you know, we as humans were existing in this physical 3D universe. So that's the magic part that nobody can quite explain all the way. You know, like, we can't really put a label on consciousness exactly, because it's just such a huge concept. And, you know, one of the ideas of the seven hermetic principles is that the universe itself is made out of consciousness. So it's hard to describe that part.
You know, I love that. And I don't even disagree. Like, I had a near-death experience about 8 years ago and died and had conversations with God, the divine consciousness, and, you know, learned some things. And lots of people have done similar things, but there is something. And, you know, anybody really knows that there's something, and some people push back and want to label not this and that, whatever, but there's something there, and it is inside of us, and it's part of us, and it extends between us and between us and the whole. And so whatever the labels are, maybe we don't have to fuss about right this second, but that is the first layer of identity, is that thing. Okay.
Yeah. And so every time we interact with anything, it could be a person, an object, a place, or an experience, the first point of contact really is through the field or source or whatever your word is. I like the word field. So then we take the information from that relational experience, and it gets translated into us and embodied into us, into our nervous system. So the nervous system, as many of us probably know, loves running patterns. So what it does is it takes that information and it builds a pattern so that we can use that pattern. And many of our patterns are wonderful. You know, have you ever thought about how many things you do during the day that you don't need to think about? You know how to brush your teeth and use a spoon and, you know, open a door. And a good thing, you don't have to think about that every time you need to do it, because boy, that would just take up a lot of your mental real estate.
It certainly would. And, you know, you said field. I know a guy who was a creator of brain fingerprinting and stuff that's been used by the FBI and the CIA and stuff like that. But he calls it the conscious unified field and the connection. And so when you said field, I thought of this fellow and the use of the word field. So anyway, you're right. So what I'm hearing you teach me is that my first contact is through that energy field. I take that in. There's lots of the piece of field that are recorded as patterns, and good thing, because I don't want to think about my heartbeat or my digestion or using a spoon or breathing or whatever, where my eyes are moving in every second. So that's all part of those patterns that I learn and use for better or worse, hopefully mostly for better, in that part of the nervous system. So good. Keep going.
Yeah. The nervous system, I mean, very nice summary there. Thank you. The nervous system is really, really just, it excels at patterns. And I think we sometimes forget that it's a tool that we can use in that way. And that includes the patterns that make us feel uncomfortable, because we also record those patterns that we don't like. And there are many reasons for those, you know, it could be, you know, something that happened in childhood or et cetera, right? And so all of that information gets stored as patterns. And the next phase, the next level of the five layers, is the emotional level. So what the nervous system does is it helps that information become really visceral for us. And it translates that information through our neurological pathways and our chemical pathways. So this is nerve signaling. This is neuromodulators like serotonin and oxytocin and cortisol and all that stuff. And so emotions have this like very, well, they're really strong because we feel it all over the body. Because if you stop and look at the nervous system, you know, maybe most of us learned about the nervous system in some faraway biology class, and they told us that, oh, it's the brain, the spine, and the nerves. But that is just a tiny portion of the story. The nervous system is throughout your entire organism. You know, let's talk about the gut. The gut is called the second brain. We have more neurotransmitters in our gut than we do in the brain itself. The heart sends more signals to the brain than vice versa. And everywhere throughout your body, you have receptors for all of these very interesting chemicals, these neuromodulators that are circulating. They're everywhere from your skin layer all the way down into your organs.
So I have a question that it's just something that I've thought about. And you know, you made very clear the chemicals come from all these different glands that secrete them, and they're connected to the experience. And there's some, you know, yippy ones like dopamine and serotonin, and there's some ones that protect us or trash us if we have too much of, like cortisol and some other things. And I've often wondered, so the body has these neurotransmitters, chemical cocktails, right? And they come from these experiences. I've wondered, and we know the names of them, you know, serotonin, you said some, anandamide, and some other ones. I've wondered in the energetic essence of the spirit, I wonder if there's neurotransmitter chemicals that are of different kinds that we don't know the names of in that thing. Because sometimes, you know, you feel things in your body, but there seems to also, at least to me, to be an energetic or spiritual response too. And I don't know how to describe it. So I say, maybe that's, you know, equivalent neurotransmitters in the spirit or the energy that at the source. Anyway, I'm just getting you sidetracked, but that's something that I've wondered about.
Oh, that's a really cool idea. And you know what? I mean, the universe is so vast and so full of all kinds of possibilities. I bet that does exist.
It makes sense to me.
Maybe it's called quarks or something like that.
I don't know. But, you know, what are the names? I don't know. And there wouldn't be chemicals the way we understand them. But, you know, parallel things that energize or do whatever in that energy source. I call it the spirit, but whatever, like we do in the body. Anyway, so the emotions are the second layer, and they are rich and textured and come from those chemical things that we know the names of, most of. Maybe there's others we haven't discovered yet. But so that's the second layer of my identity.
That's the third layer. So the second layer is the nervous system, which is generating the chemicals, basically.
Okay, so the first is energy, and then nerves, and then the feelings. All right.
Yeah. And then so then we have a feeling about something, right? And this rises through us and it gets translated into thoughts. And then we make beliefs and ideas from those thoughts. So we're going from something that is extremely ephemeral, right? The energy field, into something embodied. And then again, into something that has sort of an ephemeral quality to it, because like a thought, so far at least, we can't touch it, right? But these thoughts, because they've already been translated through all of these levels, have a certain density to them. And we tend to kind of stick on our thoughts and take them seriously. We take our ideas and our beliefs seriously. And what happens when we do that is that they snowball, they condense together, and it's like a rock rolling down a mountainside, and all of these things gather together. And what you end up with is an identity, who you think you are, based on all of the experiences that have translated through.
You know, I have a client who some years ago, he's been a very long-term client, very successful person, a coaching client. And he said to me one day, 3 or 4 years ago, you know, I just finally realized I am not my thoughts. I used to believe, and this is him talking, I used to believe that everything I thought had to be true. And I realized it's just a thought. It isn't anything. And so when you said that, I thought of him saying that.
Oh, man, that's kind of fun when you have that profound experience, right? And then you realize, oh, maybe I don't have to take all this as seriously as I do. And maybe I have a little more room to laugh at myself or to enjoy things, because it feels a little bit more playful, because you realize that the thoughts are not you. They're just a piece of you that's happening on the inside.
Well, that's so. So knowing that there's these layers to the identity, how do you use that? You talked about used to be acupuncture. Now you do a lot of remote work and energy work and things like that. How do you use that layered knowledge of the identity to help someone or to guide them or to suggest or point or whatever it is? How do you tell me how that works?
Well, it's so individual. It really depends on what's going on with each client and the needs and the desires they have when they come in. And, you know, everybody's got, usually they come in because they're experiencing something that doesn't feel comfortable, what you might call a problem that they're looking for a solution for. And when we do this kind of work, what we do is I take them into their field so they can experience themselves. And that feels really good because it feels really good to connect to yourself. And all kinds of information exists in there. So depending on the person, different things come up. But it is quite interesting that they always come in with what is essentially an identity problem. You know, they think like, well, I'm the type of person who does, or I'm the type of person who doesn't. And that leads to a lot of choices, right, about how they behave in a situation that might be challenging. So, you know, I had a client come in somewhat recently. She was, you know, a very successful entrepreneur, had a business with about 100 employees, married, kids, house, like the whole package, right? Like everything was going quite well. But like everybody, you know, we all need to unwind things sometimes. She was having an issue with one of her employees who wasn't able to really understand her role very well. And so she was like sending back questions and needs that my client, the boss, was having a hard time processing because she felt like the employee wasn't picking up her end of, you know, picking up her ball, so to speak. And so it was getting to be a little bit of a tense situation. So she came in, and over a course of treatments, some interesting things happened where she actually interfaced with her inner child at various ages. And some people call this parts work, and some people call this internal family systems. But these are really patterns that your nervous system is holding for you. So because they're part of you, of course, they have personalities, they have needs, they have desires. And it's kind of, I think, easier to interact with them in that way when they look like a person that you can relate to. But when it's your inner child, you know, we often think that, oh, we're supposed to heal our inner child. And that can be true, but it can also go both ways. And this client was interesting because she had that experience. So in one of the sessions, her 8-year-old self came forward. And this was the one who remembered how it felt to be real, how it felt to be authentic. You know how some kids, when you meet them, they're just really confident in themselves? It's almost like they haven't learned to start questioning that. It's kind of refreshing to see that. So this 8-year-old self, she had the treasure map and the key, basically, and she gave it to my client. And when that kind of thing happens, what it feels like is like a breath of fresh air. You get to bask in your own light. You get to feel like you're coming home to yourself. It's really rejuvenating because you remember your own strength and your own capacity. So that was a great shift in one of the early sessions. Then later on, she had another interaction, the flip side of that. One of her teenage selves came forward. It was about 14. And this one didn't know how to trust, didn't know how to show up with people, was afraid to open the walls and kind of interact, which is kind of common when we're teenagers, right? Because life can feel insecure in a lot of ways. But because she had already been resourced by her younger self, she could, my clients, like show up like, you know, the adult who can take care of things, which is kind of the dream situation when you can go back in and say, hey, teenager, you're going to be okay. We got this. Look at how good we turned out. It's going to be okay. You can relax. And her teenager could hear her and lean in to opening those walls. And the result of all this work was my client refound her identity of being the compassionate leader. And she was able to kind of create that clarity around communication that let both her and her employee, you know, remember how to be productive together. So that was a great outcome.
So that is a great story, and I'm going to ask some questions about it, and you can answer them however you want. So when you say she's in a session with you, and her 8-year-old self comes forward, or her 14-year-old self comes forward, obviously completely different. One with the treasure map and the key, and one with the insecurities of adolescence, not knowing, you know, being less willing to trust. What does it mean to come forward? Like, are you, what it makes me think of, and I know this is wrong, so you can correct me, but it makes me think of hypnotic work where someone's, you know, in a hypnotic trance or something, working with a hypnotist, and, you know, you're talking to them and they, you know, who's talking, and you ask those kinds of questions and you start remembering those kind of stuff. So fix me. I'm sure that that's wrong, but tell me how that works to bring somebody, bring someone's, the parts work, as it were, some part forward.
Well, you know, it's kind of surprisingly easy. Like, you don't need to be hypnotized to feel yourself. So what I do in the beginning is I have them do like a very simple kind of breathing meditation to get them to kind of calm and settle so that they feel a little more relaxed. And then through some guided questions, I invite them to feel what they're noticing about themselves. And so oftentimes that's, you know, another aspect of personality comes forward, or it's, you know, whatever the situation is, like the relationship issue that feels tricky, or it's the noticing this pattern running in themselves that is problematic. So does that answer that question? It's really just you tuning into yourself with some guidance, because, you know, sometimes that takes some practice.
It does. If you don't know how to, if you haven't practiced breathing or relaxing or turning off the noise that the head generates, you know, all the thinking, if you haven't practiced that relaxation, I often tell people, I have them learn to meditate also, and say, why do I need to get good at meditation? And I'll say, well, you don't meditate to get good at meditation. You're trying to develop a skill, and that's how to direct your thinking. Because without some skill that you learn at that, it's just, you know, it's all over the place. That's why they call it the monkey mind. So that's, it makes sense to me in the context of, you know, learning to pay attention to what's going on. So I get it. You ask some, you get relax, some guided questions, tune into what you're actually feeling. It must feel really good for someone to be able to be invited to feel that, and then to talk about what they're actually feeling and be safe to do that, because that doesn't happen in our lives in very many places.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, right? We're not invited into safety responses that much. But, you know, I wonder if things are going to change around that, because I really feel like we're living in different times. Part of that feels great, that we get to, I think we have more permission to lean into these activities than we used to. There's still, you know, progress that needs to be made. But, you know, the thing is, too, is everybody can do this. Everybody is, you know, if you like this word, clairvoyant about themselves. Everybody can get information about themselves. The only thing they have to do really is to give themselves permission to look. It is kind of that simple.
Why are people afraid to look?
Oh, yeah, that's a big question. There's so much training that goes into whether or not you allow yourself to be curious. You know, like to go back to the identity question here, you know, the thought layer, the mental layer doesn't really solidify until around this age of 7 or 8. And so we identify strongly with our thought and our identity layers because we're told to. Society tells us to do that. But that means that there's this huge time window when we're getting all of this information into our system. We're building up all of these nervous system patterns. We're building up all of these emotional patterns. And that feeds into the thoughts and identities layer hugely. So by the time you become an adult, you know, if you haven't spent time looking at, oh, you know, what was the early information that was in my environment and available to me? And do I like it? And do I want to keep using it? You know, we don't usually ask these questions earlier. So it's not, sometimes it's not easy to even know that you can go there.
It's not. And some people, I think, I use the word afraid of, because I think that you said permission. And you know, I agree with what you, how you're describing it. Is it, I guess after you learn to do it and you learn that it's safe, then it can be joyful to go examine and ask questions about those early thought patterns. And you mentioned we're told to do that. We're taught and told by structure and society that the thinking thing is way more important. And the really sometimes like the only thing that matters, and, you know, you leave your whatever at the door or that kind of feeling. And I think you're right. There's some change around that. But I can see how after you've allowed all those thought patterns to solidify and turn into the rocks, as it were, of your identity, that it can be maybe difficult, maybe a little scary to go in and ask the questions about what set of feelings and patterns created this thought that says, I am this, or I am not this, or, you know, this is who I am, when, you know, personality is fluid.
Yeah, you know, it can be tough if you've never seen it before. If you've never seen anybody do that before, or ever heard about it as a thing, then it's not always easy to arrive at that as a conclusion yourself, because we're so, you know, we really learn from our environments heavily. So that like has a big impact on us. But, you know, if you can make a little space, just like it sounds like what your client did, if you can make a little space between having the thought and recognizing, oh, that's a thought, or, oh, that's a feeling. And you know what? I can either react to it the way I usually do, which could be the negative, like, oh no, shame spiral. I hate myself that I said that thing, or I did that thing, or I can't believe I, or why did I, or whatever the inner monologue is. If you can give yourself a little bit of a pause, even a 5-second pause, then that's giving yourself grace to notice that you are bigger than those reactions, because those reactions happen inside you. You're the container of them. So that can build agency, because when you realize you have agency, then it can become more fun to make change.
I love that. There's a book called The Wedge. Written by a dude named Scott Carney, and he talks about that space. He calls it the wedge, and he introduces the topic by talking about this lady who had won several years in a row some kind of tough endurance or tough mudder, you know, outdoor thing, et cetera, where for many, many unbelievable number of hours they kept doing stuff in these adverse circumstances. And he asked her, you know, about how do you do this? And she talked exactly about that. Well, I just separated. You know, what's going on around me, the cold, the wet, the this, the that, that's going on. That's fine. And then I decide, me, I'm doing this, you know, and the doing this was to keep going or not give up or whatever it is. And because she lived in that space, which he named The Wedge, the name of the book. And so that was an interesting thing that you just described. I want to ask you another question. So you've been doing this now for 20 years, nearly, you said. What happened in your life that made this work like important for you? Because it's clear in the way you talk about it that you believe in it, you've seen success, it's important to you. When I asked you what you wanted to talk about, it was this. Why is that in your hierarchy of things like way up there?
Oh, thanks for noticing. It is way up there in my hierarchy of things. Absolutely. Well, this is my purpose. This is why I'm here. I'm here to help uplift the human collective. And the way that I do that is by helping individuals understand they have the agency to be amazing and to influence their communities also in a really positive way. So that's why I'm here. And I know that's why I'm here, because of the energy work I've done, you know, with myself.
I love that. And so you use words that are dear to my heart, purpose and meaning and why you're here. You know, that implies a bunch of stuff. It implies that that energetic essence in all of us has a purpose. It implies that the purpose probably universally is to add good to the world in some fashion that's unique to that individual, as opposed to something else. Those are two really important ideas, that there is purpose, that you can find it, and that the purpose is a positive thing. And, you know, I would generalize, but you said that. Would you disagree with that, or do you think that's true?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people are here with like a lovely purpose of uplifting And maybe that means just like they uplift one person in their lifetime. Maybe it means they uplift a billion, whatever it is. Many people are here with something similar, which is really cool to see. But I also think a lot of people are here to have experiences where they can grow. And those are usually are ones that we would define as challenging in some way. And so that carries a different kind of emotional patterning around it.
It does, but just the implication of growing. So if you have a purpose of uplifting, and you say many do, and I agree. I mean, I interview a lot of people on this show and on my podcast and just meeting people.
And you clearly are one of these people.
Well, yes. But I hear people say all the time, well, I want to help people. And when I dig into it, it usually comes from some set of experiences that they have had that have brought them to that. So my next question is, okay, I believe it. It's your purpose. What I'm curious about is what set of things happened or what was the trail to get to you, say, get you to say, okay, that's my purpose. I know it. I'm clear. I'm excited about it. And I'm doing that, even if it's hard or challenging or whatever. Like, how did you get, you don't fall up this mountain is my point. And so tell me a little bit about the journey.
Sure. Well, I always had the idea that I needed to be useful in some way. And so that, I don't know at what age that started. I'm not sure, but it was always present in my mind. And as I was going through school, I was trying to figure out, what does that mean for me? I don't know. I was taking classes, you know, I spent a lot of years in school studying things, like trying to figure out where I could fit in. Eventually, you know, I actually have like, you know, 3 master's degrees and 3 bachelor's degrees. And just trying to find that spot. Where am I useful in a way that makes sense to me to be useful? And so at one point I figured it was, oh, maybe I'm here to be, you know, a teacher. So I started teaching and I taught everybody. I taught preschool all the way up through adult ed, trying to find like where should I be the teacher? And I decided maybe college was a thing because I like talking to adults. They're fun. And so I was in school for medieval French literature to be a professor of that, which is kind of niche, but, you know, I love studying interesting things. And I think languages are lots of fun. And I couldn't figure out why I was getting more depressed because I'm not really a depressive type of person. And, you know, my life was good. And I just, but my mood was just plummeting. And one day I was sitting in my apartment in New York City where I lived at the time. I was alone in my apartment and I had one of those moments of like, oh no, help. And I didn't direct that in any particular direction, but that's how I felt, was please help. And then I heard a voice inside my body that was not my voice and it had no gender. And it said one word, clear as a bell, did not repeat itself. It said acupuncture. And I had never had an experience like that. And I was like, what? But it was so clear. So the next thing I did was I got on my computer and I looked up acupuncture schools near me. And I found one I liked and I applied and I got in. And that was the beginning of a beautiful story because studying Chinese medicine opened the door for me for the things that I was looking for, a way to be useful for the entire organism. And it introduced me to energy work, which I particularly love because I love getting into the, you know, the mystery of things and the whys of things. And I think with energy work, you could really discover why you do the things you do and why you love the things you do and why you are here in really clear ways.
So you heard the word acupuncture. It was not your voice. It came from some other source. And it's interesting because more than I discover, more than you might think, people have these nudges or pushes or intuition or inspiration or divine interventions, or, you know, people have lots of names for them, but they are things that come when we seek them, because that agency that you talked about seems to be one of the non-negotiable pieces of the existence, right? And it seems like that's always there. And so it was a suggestion or pointing or pushing you into a possibility, not demanding anything. And you responded. You said, okay. And you went to the computer and looked it up and found it and enrolled and decided And though all of those agency actions allowed you to get the juice, as it were, from that nudge, where do you think, if you have an opinion, where do you think that nudge comes from? Like, what is that?
Yeah, you know, I've spent a lot of time thinking about that, because while I'm a person who believes in, you know, source, I definitely do. The idea of the gods that we write about in our books, I could take it or leave it. Seems to me to be an incomplete picture in a lot of ways. And so I never really thought that this was the voice of God, because I was like a god from a book. I don't know if that kind of god could speak to me. But it just had this rightness quality to it. I was like, oh, extremely trustworthy. It knows what it's talking about, would not steer me wrong. It had this really clear quality to it. And so, you know, as I progressed through studying energy work and things like this, it has occurred to me that perhaps it was my higher self, which you could also say is another word for God.
Many people, not just you, have trouble, you know, using the divine or God or whatever, because we have created so many weird boxes that notion fits in. And so people, well, I don't know about all that, because I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to define. So if we set all those weird boxes aside, what it sounds like to me is there is an intelligence. It is driven. It is personal. It knows us individually, because it didn't just say to everybody in the universe acupuncture. It said it to you. So that essence, that gigantic thing, whatever you want to call it, is individual. It seems like it is benevolent or loving or whatever word you want to use, because it pushed you, me, I've experienced these too, but they're always in a direction of growth or possibility, right? So from that I say, okay, and my own experiences and the zillion people that I've talked to, but it seems to be individual, it seems to be benevolent in that it cares about us, and it seems to be growth oriented. Like, I've never heard someone listen to hear that sense of rightness and have it move in a direction of shrinking or being less than. And so growth oriented, benevolent, and individual. So whatever you call it, or I call it, it has those characteristics.
We are so like, what a nice way of describing it. We are so lucky we get to experience that in that way, right? That benevolence, that growth orientation. Yeah.
And individual. What I think most about that is it is personal. When I think about the vastness of the cosmos, that infinite essence and energy knows my frickin' name? Like, hello, that just blows my mind. And it feels right, like you said, and it feels, you know, warm and fuzzy, for lack of a better thing. Like, there is that thing.
Yeah.
And I wonder, do you think we can train ourselves to be more in tune, to listen better, to hear, to connect with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, our entire organism is like a listening factory, if you will, or a listening, warehouse? I don't know what the word for it is. What it does is it listens all day and responds to us all day. It's always giving us signals across everywhere. You know, if you even just thinking about where the receptors are for your neurotransmitters, right? They're literally everywhere. So your whole organism is listening and is talking to you, and it can be the kind of receptor of that information, that big, you know, growth-oriented, personalized, benevolent information. And so this, I mean, I would say that, like, that's coming in, right? That's the energy field itself. And then when it gets translated through us, the voice is kind of quiet, but it's there. So it's really just a quality of, do you want to get quiet enough to listen? And then do you want to take that information and use it? And you get to choose. But it feels good when you do.
No, I love that description. And you've said the words. In sacred literature, it's called a still, small voice. You know?
Yeah, it doesn't usually show.
No, there was there's a passage in, I think it's in the Old Testament, where some dude, some prophet was trying to talk to God, and he, you know, there was a fire, and there was a whirlwind, and there was a bunch of rocks, and all this stuff happened. And the scripture notes God wasn't in the fire or the whirlwind or the earthquake or whatever. And then it says, and afterwards there was a still, small voice. Hmm. You know, and you've just described that perfectly. And so I think that's right. And I don't know about you, but to me, that's like comforting. And the next thing that pops out for me immediately is, okay, how do I train myself to hear that and pay attention and like be there for that? And I love your description of that listening, massive receptor. Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, if we are designed really as aspects of this universal mind or universal consciousness, then of course all the parts are talking to each other all of the time, right? Like the symphony of life unfolding or the universe unfolding or whatever level you're on with that is happening all the time around us. And so because we're part of that, we can also experience it. And when you tune into the larger aspects, man, it feels good. It feels expansive. You know, you can hear the planets singing, as it were. And that's possible because we're part of it. We're not separate from it. So yeah, we get to do that. Yeah, we can practice that skill. Yeah, we can up level and do that more. And at the same time, we're also in these bodies that feel kind of dense, you know, and have some limits built in, perhaps so like our brains don't explode with all the information. But, you know, they say that we perceive through our senses only about 5% of what is around us. Well, you know, that I'm assuming that's good in some way, right? Because we still perceive a lot and we feel a great many things. I forget where I was going with this. What was the question?
It doesn't matter, because what you've described is beautiful. We were talking about the listening thing, the ability to tune in. So yeah. You said several things. We are able to tune in with every single fiber and cell in our body, and yet that is only a small part of what's available. And up-leveling our ability to do that is available, and it seems like it would be desirable. I need to ask you, I don't need anything, but I want to ask you a different question. What else, besides what we've talked about, do you want to teach the listeners or share with, either from your own experience or from your teaching or how you help people, like across the board? What would you like to make sure that we learn, hear, or understand?
Well, you know, emotions are something that we often struggle with because they're so visceral and because they really do involve the entire organism, as we talked about. And because we've been trained to focus on our thought layers and our identity layers, it's not that easy to control your emotions from those layers, because they are, if you will, more superficial and kind of more rigid. They've already been translated, right? And emotions are sort of fluid and moving around. So you can control them that way, but it's not easy for most of us. But so then we tend to view our emotions as dangerous and something that needs to be suppressed or channeled in a particular way. And actually what emotions are is signals. They're not commands, which is what we're kind of afraid of. They're signals that there's a pattern running, and there's an opportunity for us to make a shift in that pattern so that we can move more smoothly through whatever is happening. So if we viewed our emotions as signals and as our friends, then it would be easier to process them and easier to use them as the tools that they are.
So what I'm hearing is, if I have an emotion, then what you told me, and I believe you, is that says it's a signal. There is a pattern running. The energetic being is experiencing something. There's a pattern running that's creating or inviting or sharing or expressing itself in this emotion. And rather than allow it to simply go through the thought layer and do whatever it is, I have, because I now know it means there's a pattern running, it's a signal, I can say, I wonder what that pattern is. I wonder whether or not I want to pay attention to that or do something with it. And it then becomes a choice point instead of a trigger.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's you acting from a more resourced place. And we usually make pretty good decisions when we're feeling resourced.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. So I want to make sure that people have the opportunity to either follow you or engage with you or have, you know, find your stuff that you have, books and programs and things. So where, if I just am desperate to have more Haley, more learning or more stuff from what you've taught, where do I go? Where do I find you so that that can happen?
My website's the best place. It's my name, HaleyEnright.com. So there's two Y's in the Haley, and the Enright is like right, not left. And so, yeah, so I'm working on a book. Let's see at what point that becomes finished, but at some point it will materialize. And right now the best way to get a hold of me is the website and through a treatment, because that way, you know, you experience you, and that is my job, is to help the collective uplift that way.
HaleyEnright.com. Haley Enright. And I recommend that you go see that. Haley, when you think about your job, which you just called it, I don't think that. I think it's your mission. I think you love doing it. And identifying it with the word job might trigger in some people the feeling of, oh, I have a job. But I don't think you view it that way. Is that true, or am I full of baloney?
No, I really love it. I like the word job because it sounds a little bit simpler, I think, than, well, my whole life's purpose. Let me tell you all about that. That can be a little bit overwhelming. But if I say job, they're like, oh, yeah, I get that. I have a job too.
Okay. Well, it's your job and your life purpose. And if listening, you want to relate to it as her work or her life purpose, either way, it would be a delightful experience. So we have just a few minutes left, and I want to ask you, is there anything that we did not talk about that is either from your experience or something you want to leave with us at this time?
Oh my gosh, we talked about so many lovely things. I really enjoyed this conversation. It was really, really went to a lot of interesting places. I cannot think of anything else at the moment.
And that's okay. So... If someone hears this, we've talked about purpose. You talked about how you found it. I found it interesting. I've got 47 master's degrees and spent 2,000 semester hours in school. I'm joking, exaggerating, but it probably feels like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how would you help someone find their own job that is really their purpose? If, you know, I imagine you get people that want to do that or ask if what I'm doing really is my purpose, or, you know, that kind of searching or probing question. Do you try to help people do that? And if you do, how does that work?
Yeah, I get asked that question a lot during energy treatments. Why am I here? What am I supposed to do? Is the thing that I'm doing now a good fit for me? And, you know, the answers always lie within the person. When you do go into your energy field and you start exploring, what often comes up for a lot of people is the, oh yeah, you're here to do something good. And that looks like a lot of different things for different people, right? But again, it's the skill of listening. The more you can listen to yourself, the easier that information comes in. So the answers are within. They always have been.
I want everybody listening to tattoo that on your forehead or your screen. The answers are within, they always have been. And what Haley's taught us and expressed today is that you already have, and you can further develop, however much you haven't done it, the skill, the beautiful, wonderful, liberating skill of listening to yourself and connecting with the truth. It is that essence, the base layer of that identity that is not contaminated. It might be filtered, but you can go down to the base layer that isn't. It's below the identities and the rocks that have become solidified to your thoughts and everything else. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, think of all the people that you've helped on your journey, right? All of them can do it, right? They can listen to themselves. We can all listen. It's really kind of that simple. You already know how to do that too. But, you know, in this human experience, we need help doing things because we're here to interact with each other. We're here to form the kinds of communities that make sense for us. And so if we had everything that we needed easily at our fingertips, we wouldn't really interact as much and we would miss out on a lot of opportunities. So it's good that we need help from each other.
You know, you said about growth earlier, and we're running out of time, so I'm not going to go there, but we are here to grow, and we do have the skills and ability in each other. Haley, I want to thank you for sharing your journey, your excitement, your passion, and everything that you're about with me and with the audience today.
Thank you so much. Really enjoyed chatting with you.
You are absolutely welcome. Listeners, I want you to take the opportunity to go back through this and listen. She has a very beautiful way of describing this. And the essence is the truth of who you really are is available to you. Maybe you haven't learned to listen. Maybe you want to. Maybe you have some and you need to do it some more. But however you do it, take the opportunity, HaleyEnright.com. Take a listen, take a look, and give yourself the blessing of listening and finding to your listening to your true self and finding yourself and your purpose. Why? So you can move forward and live your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.